FM presents a talk organized by the Department of International Relations entitled The Rise of the Islamic State in Iraq and the Misery of Democratization. This talk is delivered by Dr. Arsalan Al-Shinawi.
Good morning, and I'd like to thank you all for joining us this morning, and I'd also like to thank Campus FM listeners, as this lecture is being recorded for Campus FM, so you can listen to the lecture again if you want to hear it again after listening today, or those of you who can't make it can stream it, so tell your friends. So I would say that stability in the Middle East has been one of the most pressing international issues over the past decades, and even more so after the past 10 years due to the dramatic changes that have taken place, some of which have been brought about due to external factors, others due to internal factors. And the events of the past year and the rise of the Islamic State has left us with even more questions about the Middle East and stability in the region. And I would say that urgent insight and understanding are necessary to if the international community and our governments want to resolve the issues at stake. And due to his expertise and insight, I think there's no one better placed than Dr. Al-Shinawi to answer any of the questions that we might have. Those of you who are students or friends of the department probably know exactly who Dr. Al-Shinawi is. He's not a new face, as one of our resident full-time academics since 2009, after more than 13 years at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Malta, where he also had postings in North Africa. He has also lectured at the Faculty of Oriental Studies and School of International Relations in St. Petersburg State University in Russia, and he's currently a visiting lecturer at the Faculty of Economics, Management and Accountancy, that is FEMA, here at the university. He also lectures at the American University of Iraq in Soleimani. He's a research associate with the Iraq Institute of Strategic Studies in Beirut, a member for the Foreign Editorial Board of the annual of Asian and African Studies Journal of St. Petersburg State University, and he acts as a supervisor and external examiner for graduate dissertations at the Master's Program in Diplomacy of the Diplo Foundation. He has two recent and interesting publications, one being The State Building in Iraq Since 2003, Challenges and Lessons, which is a Jean Monnet occasional paper published by the Institute for European Studies. He also has another article coming out in the forthcoming edition of the Journal of Maltese History, that is an IPE perspective on the economic and foreign policy of the government in Malta. He studied pharmacy and diplomacy at the University of Malta and IPE at the universities of Amsterdam and Nijmegen in the Netherlands. He is fluent in Maltese, Arabic, Kurdish, and Persian languages. His research interest is in the field of political economy of development, notably in the Muslim Arab world and the impact of Western dominance in IR theory. And now I won't take up any more of Dr. Al-Shinawi's time, where he's going to be speaking to us about the rise of the Islamic State in Iraq and the misery of democratization. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's an honor to have this opportunity. I can assure you I am grateful to each one of everyone here around. I'm very grateful, and thank you very much for coming here to listen to my story of today. I should be honest with you, and I'm a bit demotivated today because unfortunately the subject is about democratization. I was born in Baghdad, and I go back to Iraq, and I'm a Kurd myself, and then unfortunately lecturers in this part of the world who talk about democratization, discuss democratization, do research about democratization, publish about democratization, they do not come here and to listen. That's demotivating very much. If I'm a lecturer, the first thing I should recognize that I'm a student myself. If I don't want to learn, interact, find my mistakes, correct myself, show the mistakes of the speaker, draw his attention to other research, then we are doomed. If the lectures we don't interact, exchange, learn from each other, then all that we talk with the rector and all these meetings we have to push forward academia. And yesterday, the speech of Dr. Albert Gott, when the students graduated, 3,000 students in Malta graduated, including many Europeans and foreigners. It's a sorry state, I should say that. But just the same, I'm very proud of all of you that came here. I appreciate so much. I'm not underestimating anyone at all. But it's a public lecture. I think there's a problem how we can balance between some dry, arid, theoretical, whatever we call it, I have a word for it, I leave for later, while we have to address everyone. No one knows less than the other one. It's just about being specialized in something. I myself appreciate very much a good footballer. A good footballer has five PhDs in football. a good musician, anything, is not about academia and having a PhD in political science. You are all special and everyone has his own field. But certainly, being not specialized in this field may be something, so we try to make it more public, more the way that people from different fields, different interests in life, why should everyone worry, why damn there is Islamic State in Iraq? So thank you very much for coming, and let me go on. I always say in my class, no one has monopoly on the truth. The truth in social sciences is very subjective. My background is pharmacy. I studied chemistry and physics all my life. I got pharmacy from Malta, different days in 91. And unfortunately, after all these years in social sciences, I do miss that clarity of natural sciences. There's no question about physics, chemistry. There's no question about biology. You see it, you feel it. It makes sense. But then, who wants to remain busy about, I don't know, how animals eat while his country is burning? So also the beauty of social sciences and the abstract and the philosophy and the history is wonderful too. But that's the problem of natural sciences. So in social sciences, we do miss that clarity, that clear understanding, that there's no way you ask your lecturer in chemistry, why, I don't know, CH4, why water is H2O. But in social sciences, everything is subjective. I have no more monopoly on the truth. The truth is very subjective. The world is getting extremely complex. Human nature is complex. I always believe in complexity. Nothing is simple. Today we try to discuss two subjects which a bit annoys me, bothers me. There's the rise of the Islamic State in Iraq. I thought always in my teaching, in my learning, whether I'm wrong, right, I don't know what is wrong, what is right. I see it very much connected to the misery of democratization. There is something called democratization. And me from Iraq, my first language was never English. That's why I don't write fluent in English. No, no. When you write democratization, you mean you do it. I think this word, if I'm allowed to change it, it should not exist. It should be democratize meant. Democratization develops. You do not teach it. There's no learning in it. You develop it with centuries. That's something we come to it. Even the word linguistically is problematic. You do not democratize. There's democratize meant. Societies reach democratize meant. That even the concept is wrong. Now let's not bother you with the history of the concept itself, the critique of democratization inside the West, the famous Friedrich Nietzsche. We don't come to that. That's for another story. But unfortunately, we have this in academia. We have courses organized called democratization. We have people, academics, non-academics, journalists, you name it. The man in the street talks of the necessity of democratization. With it, we have another ugly phenomenon. Both are ugly phenomenon, very ugly. Another more ugly, but in different way, of what's happening in this world, we have something called the Islamic State in Iraq. People, Iraq is not one country. Libya is not one country anymore. Syria is not one country anymore. That's a joke. One third of Iraq is outside the control of the government. It has autonomy, it has army, it sells oil, it has banks, it has universities, it has teachers, it has idiots, it has killers, it has criminals. Syria, you can tell. We have a group of people in Iraq, I think a couple of thousands, from all around the world, a big cocktail of human beings. There are many Westerners, Christian, there are many Davids, many Jacob, different people. There are many Muslims who lived in Europe for years, some born there, some second generation, third generation. Millions of Muslims and Arabs have immigrated to Europe, in Holland, in Belgium, in Germany, economic reasons purely. And we have many locals, and we have many from other Islamic countries, many Chechens, Malaysia, Libya, Tunisia, Saudi, Emirates, Iraq, Libya, Dagestan, from Australia, from Germany, from France, from United States, from UK, blacks, whites, yellow, the old terminology of human beings for their color. Some 19th century, 18th century European invention too. Yellow, white, red. The Indians were called red. So it's a big problem for that region. We have thousands of militants ready to die for a cause many of us do not understand. The problem is this, that they are powerful. There are reports that they are in Libya, they are in Tunisia. And unfortunately, there are things to be said in this class. We should make it clear. I ask you one thing. Such a group of militants fighting from the morning till the evening, what do they need? Do you think they live in vacuum? They need state, they need government, they need banks, they need streets, they need food. And that's the problem in Iraq. And that's the problem of the democratizing, we'll come to it. In Iraq, one third of the population is isolated from the government. That came after the story of democratization. We'll come to it now. We have this democratization. It's the soft power in the language, my dear colleague, I should thank Samut Karman for the head of department. We have a wonderful head of department allowed for this lecture. We have this soft power of external intervention, which is the hard power. They are twins, they are brothers, sisters, cousins, I don't know. pretext, interacting with it, academics. This is the field of academics, policymakers, people who talk, live on the surplus of society, like me, do nothing, just talk and invent stories. The hard part of it, the hard part was invasion. Iraq in 2003 was invaded by over 140,000 soldiers, from the air, from the sky, from the sea. Iraq collapsed. No government, no state, no police. Iraq became a naked man in the desert. Total chaos. A system for centuries that existed collapsed. And people expect today to have flowers in every roundabout. Libya, there was a system too. Gaddafi created a system. It went, but it's not easy to rebuild it. There's a complete chaos there. There is no system, and there's no other system in the horizon. It's very problematic. Whoever underestimates what systems are and how countries organize their politics and economics and their social structure and all that in interaction with their own indigenous factors and variables is problematic. And that's why the misery of democratization. In 2003, Bush, the President of the United States, to confirm, when he visited Britain, he declared, I don't want to bother with papers and read for you. I mean, we are in the age of internet, especially in Europe. You find all what I say. He said, literally, the purpose of going to Iraq, he said, we'd not leave miles to go to Iraq and give all these sacrifices. That was in November 2003. He said, it was not for no reason. The reason was, he declared it, the strongest man on earth, in theory, I don't know, in practice, I'm not sure. He said, the purpose is to create a democratic society in Iraq that becomes a center of progress and stability in the Middle East. Look how big that ambition was. With that, there was invasion of Iraq. So the pretext, the story, the commercialization of it was democratization. That blessed word. Europeans and Westerners, because of their industrial development, latest, the most developed people on earth now, changing, have certainly excelled in many fields of human endeavor. And certainly one of the top was commercialization. They are businessmen. Their economy expanded, went everywhere. The Japanese model is European model. The whole economic model all around the world is European. You have to be from outside Europe to realize how much Europe changed this world. You cannot feel it if you are from this part of the world. You have to be from the Middle East, from Africa, China, Russia, where I taught for 13 months, to realize how much European changed the world and how much they have no right today to withdraw from it and claim that the world is confused. They confused it, rightly or wrongly, in a good way or in a bad way. But there are side effects of all what they did. And I think to my little mind, this is a major side effect of the clash of modernity with that part of the world. And that's more complex, leads to Christianity and modernity and you name it. But let's focus, make it very simple. How these two phenomena, I consider them ugly, are very much connected. With democratization that justified complete collapse of a system in Iraq, please the slide of Iraq, I beg you. Thank you. I should thank also Mr. Kalleya, Charles, one of my students. This is Iraq. I would not to ask, how many people who teach democratization and talk about Iraq are aware of what is Iraq all about? You can see the colors in Iraq. These are the ethnic, linguistic, you name it. Any division comes to your mind of the old world you read in some books exists in Iraq. This is not the new world. That's the terminology. This is not the United States of America, 200 years. This is thousands of years. This is Mesopotamia. Allow me, this is damn Mesopotamia, where the man started writing, where our ancestors were the first to invent something called law. I punish you, tooth for tooth, the famous Babylonia. This is the land, the invention of God. This God of Christianity, of Judaism, of Islam was invented. Which centuries after, just to quote, Hitler attacked that God. Not that I'm impressed with Hitler, but you should read for different people. And in Europe, the taboo is don't talk about Hitler, don't talk about Nietzsche. No. We are from outside. We read why these people became controversial in the society. We are more interested in them as well. We do not read for W. George Bush. I don't know. We don't need for Margaret Thatcher, biography of Margaret Thatcher. No. We read for those people that somehow rejected from the mainstream, controversial. That gives us more insight, the critique of American culture, Mencken. I come to Iraq. Mencken was American, not from Iraq. Very much criticized. And his famous statement is, which I think makes sense, the urge to save humanity is almost always a false front for the urge to rule. And we'll explain why. This is American, an essayist, a writer, too much into aesthetics. Let's go back to Iraq, I beg you. This is Iraq. You have a cocktail, I don't know which barman can produce. This is cocktail of history of mankind. I wonder how many people talk about humanitarianization, humanitarian action, conflict resolution, you name it, like we are selling spaghetti. And we come, and let us discuss what this part of the world is. And I quote here, a lot of it is not about my observation as an Iraqi man. I should pay tribute when I was in Iraq and I have all his books. We have those scholars, but they publish in Arabic. You are not aware of it. We have, for example, Dr. Ali Alwardi, a sociologist, PhD from the United States of America in Arizona, died in 1995. He's a sociologist in Iraq, wrote many books about the political and economic and historical development of that part of the world, and touched on many. So the lecture is also based on that. Also my observations in Iraq. That's my studies. We all studied in the West. I'm a graduate of the Netherlands, international political economy. But we took these tools, and we should admire the West for the development they achieved, certainly in academia. The tools they provided, the analysis. I took these tools and I went to Iraq, and they all make sense. I found problems with the analysis. No one is blaming anyone. No, please, this is not personal attack on individuals. Far from it. I do tend to believe those who talk of democracy have goodwill. I don't think they are employed by the Pentagon. Far from it. I'm not an idiot. I think they have goodwill. But let's see where they got it wrong. What are the shortfalls? Whether in theory, but I will bother you with that. The whole concept is problematic. Intellectually, allow me for the epistemologically, ontologically, but I won't bother you with that. This is a public lecture. But let's see what it got on the people of Iraq. So the purpose was to bring peace to Iraq. Iraq is neither peaceful nor democratic. There's no security in Iraq. In 2008, at the peak of the American presence, WHO described the humanitarian situation in Iraq as the worst in the history of mankind, in modern time. It was biblical. It was massive. People died. Children died. Operations in hospital were performed without anesthesia. Teeth were extracted without anesthesia. Human misery. Now let us ask, why was this brought on Iraq? And why we have the Islamic State today? Iraq is extremely colorful, checkered. This is the old world. This the world did not witness the damn changes that Europe witnessed. I'm so pleasure. I have that much pleasure. I'm extremely satisfied that I teach modern Europe. For 5 years since I've been a lecturer, I teach introduction to modern Europe. And every a major source of the lecture too. I should acknowledge my students, wonderful. Throughout the years, I have 30, 40 students. It's compulsory. Unfortunately, an intelligent person made it now optional. Fine. In the name of this blessed turf fighting, turf protection, I don't know, we are playing football or what. They're all heavyweight too. They cannot even play football. They don't do any exercise. But that's fine. This beautiful course of modern Europe, every year I have 30, 40 students just analyzing what happened in Europe. They discuss all. Enlightenment, Renaissance, Industrial Revolution, urbanization. 101, I think rather we bring Shahrayar, 1,001 change happened in this part of the world. That absolutely any analysis of the Middle East should clearly conclude none of that part of the world witnessed. If it witnessed any form of change, it was different. Different logic, different understanding, different instinct. Yet we come after 4 or 5 centuries of those massive changes in Western Europe, including the biggest wars in the history of mankind. Basic O-level history shows that Western Europe was the most continent that had wars and bloodshed. Now they are surprised why there is war in Iraq. Out of that bloodshed and conflict, they could separate church and society. And this is something we call democracy, democratization, you name it. And Huntington run into waves and we teach them first, second, third, fourth. And now we speak of the fourth wave in the Middle East. But people fail to understand. But what are we analyzing with what? These are apples and bananas in simple terms. We are studying monkeys and we try to apply to fish. That much I say things are different. The major difference is that people fail to understand and refuse to dig into it as academics. And here I blame them. Let's see what is Islam and Christianity. Nietzsche himself, again we quote, accused democracy, which he attacked left, right, center, which is not the subject, how the West within itself attacked democracy. And there are loads of sociological, economic, philosophical, loads of critique of democratization, theory, thesis, concept, notion, jobs, I don't know. What is democratization? But this part of the world is very colorful. There are many ethnic groups, many languages. This has been extremely heterogeneous, with very delicate balance, through wars, through conflict, you name it. All elements of policy, of legal, illegal, murder, you name it. Society itself has its own logic, its own indigenous change. That the West, because of its development, continuation of Orientalism of Edward Said, this patronizing, this kind of behaving that they are the path setters, they are the people who maintain monopoly on the truth, come and try to change this part of the world by invading it and saying we're going to make you democratic. What about the history of this land? There is Islam here. We have Islam. Islam is different than Christianity. Much of democratization debate has to be understood, and clearly so. As Nietzsche said, he accused democracy of being the heir of Christianity. Without Christianity and the conflict with Christianity, there was no democracy. There was no secular political or economic entity. There was no secular understanding. There was no the kind of changes that Western Europe has witnessed. But in that part of the world, the dominant force that included everything, because of maybe lack of development, that's something else, the political economy, the kind of environment. Islam was everything. Even today, the crime of IS, we will come to it very soon, is under the name of Islam. Islam remained as the largest ever sphere that could contain life in that part of the world. Unfortunately, there was no competitor. There was no industrialization. There was no conquering of the colonies of the world to busy how to milk it. There was no such activity for these people. These people in the Middle East lived for centuries occupied, colonized by the Ottoman Empire, then the Europeans. They were always ruled. And here we say, I see it very clearly, weakness of these societies. If I go out of this lecture and I'm sitting here, I should conclude one thing. You should pity these societies, not be angry with them. Pity them for their weakness. Their weakness allowed them to be conquered, to be always ruled. They never had maintained their own indigenous change. It was always exigence. Latest was this democratization that comes to Iraq, militarily topples this system, and tries to change. Let's make it more practical what we have here. The biggest divide, historical in Islam, that unfortunately did not witness, or fortunately, did not witness all the changes that Western Europe witnessed, to reach something we call modernity. For us, democratization is continuation of that exportation of modernity. Then came Orientalism, and we have it. It's just a continuation. Europe cannot invade anymore that part of the world. That era is done. Last time Europeans bombarded that part of the world was 1956, Nasser. France and Britain bombarded Egypt. After that, Europeans moved into the soft power, teaching the world. They know that they are old. They know their society is aging. They know they cannot be the warriors of 50 years ago. And now they're becoming kind to the world, and they're exporting this democratization thing. Let's not forget, if people are not happy with economics, Iraq has the largest oil reserves in the region, more than Saudi Arabia. Just to put it in practice, this is not Rwanda or Burundi, where people were left to kill each other. 600,000 in Rwanda and Burundi died. Iraq is extremely wealthy in gas and oil. It's on an ocean of oil, Iraq. Wherever you dig, oil comes out. We have here, majority of the Arabs of this part of the world are the Shia. That's a major divide in the Muslim world. A divide, you could write about it for one century, you get nowhere. That's between Protestantism and Catholicism. But in Europe, they solved it. They killed each other too much. They solved it with their changes. Those changes that could change and maintain and absorb that conflict, unfortunately, did not happen. The conflict was always there between the Shia and Sunni. And that invasion of Iraq toppled the whole system. We have a crescent of the Shia. Starts from Syria, goes to Iraq, Iran, parts of Afghanistan, goes all down to the Middle East, parts of Saudi, Bahrain. In Bahrain, that is maintained with the help of the United States, the majority are Shia. Only the ruling family is Sunni. That's also artificial. One day it will explode too with this destabilization what we had. With the invasion of the United States, in the name of democratization, we said, for the first time in history, the Shia are ruling Iraq. Shia are ruling Iraq. Now with the Shia in Iraq, with Iran helping Syria, the whole region has been destabilized. Having one third of Iraq, this part is all Sunni. After the invasion, they were eliminated from government. They were people of Saddam Hussein. They were the Sunni who ran Iraq, though being minority. The United States removed that system. For centuries, the Sunni ruled Iraq. These people of the East, the taller people, whiter people. This part of the desert towards Syria, towards Saudi, these ruled Iraq. On the rivers, the farmers, darker, smaller, Shia people. Some people even question their origin, not scientific. These never ruled Iraq. Now they are ruling Iraq. The prime minister of Iraq was a Shia. His head was wanted by Saddam. He butchered them mercilessly, but maintained order in Iraq. Iraq needed a dictator to maintain order. Iraq did not have the enlightenment, did not have the urbanization, the level of education. Basic definition of democracy is that people feel empowered. People were never empowered, were ruled. The only outlet, the only channel to express something was political Islam, unfortunately, for obvious reason. That all these structures failed. Some sort of capitalism failed in the rest of the Middle East, all parts. Some sort of socialism failed. Some sort of communism failed. The only thing these people turned to was Islam, unfortunately. Something that did not change. Something that remained ideal. And now we have a very heavy, very high degree of political Islam in much of the world, simply because Islam was always antagonized. That's how these people inside Iraq understand it. I can assure you, I'm sorry to say that. Anyone, if we make a group of people and go, we visit all Arab countries and Muslim countries, and I try to make for you interpretation, you can understand. Unfortunately, I say it unfortunately, I'm sad to say that. There is bitterness, and more increase with these invasions. Look, in all regions that there are There was invasion. There was some sort of democratization. We have serious problems. Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Libya. And we come to more problems now. But we have to mention some countries. And as my colleague, Professor, maybe no need, said, if you don't speak, who will speak? Let us see in the name of democratization, how this itself needs the best ophthalmologist in town, where it was hitting and what's leaving in peace. Why there's no democratization in Saudi? We'll talk about the role of Saudi in the Islamic State. This Islamic State are a group of people. What they share are a few anti. There is anti of everything. I heard there's anti-Jesus, anti-thesis. There's anti of everything. What unites these people that are fighting, that are beheading people? By the way, let's not exaggerate and blow out of proportion this beheading thing. Can you see the Japanese? Beheading is something of the antiquity. Men behead each other. Japan, before the two nuclear bombs, that's the price they pay to change. Now they're giving 10% to help Africa and developing countries, one of the biggest donors of the world. That was 1943. Not even in Japan, not in Australia. This is an Australian officer, and he's being beheaded. And at least the Islamic fundamentals is covering his face. He has some decency, if that you call decency. This guy, his face is there, you can see. He's beheading him. So beheading, let's not... But the only thing we could say about it, I think, my own readings in Iraq, is something of the antiquity. It's antiquity. And we have antiquity in the Middle East. And the United States with democratization, and that conflict brought antiquity. Let me something a bit not very controversial. Beheading is from Saudi Arabia. Beheading is a Saudi Arabia thing. This fundamentalism is Saudi Arabia thing. This is the part of the world that oil came very fast, did not change at all. Islam itself did not change. Islam did not witness these changes that Western Europe witnessed, let alone the heartland of Saudi Arabia. For the last 100 years, that part of the world was extremely rich. A lot of money came in. That part of the world did not need to change. Any person here who did some research in how economics can change society, society change economics, is aware of what I'm saying. There was no internal development. There was no interaction with the market. Billions came into Saudi Arabia, cash coming in. People did not need to change. Millions of Saudi could afford to stay at home, only dig about their history and get into their own reading about this world. There is anti-Americanism in Saudi, very high, very, very high, many elites. Much of this money goes to humanitarian action, and you name it also, is diverted to some other places. After the invasion of Iraq, one-third of Iraq fell out of the control, the Sunni land, unhappy, people of Saddam. The same in Libya. Who is fighting in Libya? I have information insider. There are people of pro-Gaddafi fighting with people anti-Gaddafi. Still, the same conflict is there. Pro-Gaddafi, anti-Gaddafi. Pro-Saddam, anti-Saddam. Saddam was not something simple, was not a human being with two eyes and a nose. It was a system in Iraq. And that's what people in this part fail to understand and fail to recognize. And it is so simple with this commercialization of knowledge and recipes. Unfortunately, I use this word in my book, hopefully next year. There's McDonaldization of knowledge of academia. We are giving recipes non-historical without digging for centuries, maybe years of our life to see what history there was. We are even trying to dehistoricize arguments. I think recently in our department, my colleagues is here, we even discussed the role of history in the department, how much students need history. How on earth you want to predict and work for United Nations and organization and talk about the world and profess and give recipes and you don't know the history of that part of the world. What is today is the result of yesterday. What makes Malta, Malta today is centuries of history. Only here we could talk about history. The Nice and Statue of La Valette and you name it. These people had no history. These people were not jellyfish. History that maintained order between the Sunni and the Shia for centuries. Kuwait is not settled. Bahrain is not settled. The whole, at least the Middle East. Libya is a different story. These IS people came. Criminals from all around the world. They share these variables. Anti-Americanism, anti-Judaism, some form or another. Anti-Zionism, anti-hegemony, anti-elite. No one knows who's their enemy. Why they could come and settle here? These people want people to fight for them. They are unhappy. They are struggling in Iraq. There's instability. There's chaos. The same thing they settled in Afghanistan. I can tell you one thing. The same faces, the same institutions, the same organization, the same funds, the same channels that were in Afghanistan are in Iraq. These are people going around the world. They share anti-Americanism, anti-humanity, you name it. They are a hate group. Unfortunately, to connect with the same thesis, we had many hate groups. You call them American classification, hate group, Ku Klux Klan, Nazism, I don't know, so many. Serbian militia, raping Muslim women, there are records, what you call that. During the Yugoslav war, massacring Muslims, the fact that you were Muhammad was enough to shoot you in ex-Yugoslavia. There are Dutch, in my university, there are reports. There were executions in a couple of minutes, random. So we had hate groups, but unfortunately, in that part of the world, even such a group worked within the name of Islam. And then the rubric of Islam, as I said, Islam was not challenged. That's the heart of the drama. Islam was not Christianity that was challenged in centuries. Christianity was challenged by Europeans in centuries. We had no Nietzsche again, who pronounced death of God 19th century. More than 150 years ago, Nietzsche pronounced the death of God. That's controversial, whether he believed in God or no. There are loads of analysis. But then there was no pronunciation far from it of the death of Allah. Islam remained extremely dominant. Islam remained representative of hope of people. And then what were the problems? I said in my interview to Malta Today. The problem in the Muslim world was not about Islam. Islam was not questioned, remained ideal, remained what religion means in the mind of people. But who has the monopoly on the truth? Who are the true Muslim believers? Here there was a debate. Here there were wars. Shia said, it's me. Sunni said, it's me. Iraq said so. And we never had a centralized pope. Islam is not what you think is a monolith. Islam in Jakarta in Indonesia is not the Islam in Baghdad. Islam in Cairo is not the Islam in Jeddah. Far from it. Islam in Africa has a lot of African voodoo, what you call it. If you go to Nigeria and they call it Islam inside the mosque, they are trying to, guys that they say he will wake up. And there are a lot of African influence. I mean, there are Muslim Chinese. Islam is not one thing. Islam also changed with time. Islam had also reflected certain geographies and political and economic system, like Christianity. Christianity in Germany and Christianity in Paraguay is not the same. And the mistake here, I warn, and that's what I think also, academics are not emphasizing it. For the man in the street, the minute he sees problems in the Muslim world, he says, but Christians solve their problems. We are wonderful people. Here is the error. Here is the damn mistake, and no one talks about. I say to the people here, Christianity solved the problems. All Europeans, because of their economic development, this part of the world, Christianity in Africa, Christianity in Latin America, solved its problems. Where? The problem is we associate Christianity with Europe. Not true. Europeans solved their problems because of the stability and the history that they had. Christianity in Latin America and Africa has serious problems, still fundamental in the life of people. The only thing that happened here, by removing Saddam Hussein, the system that was toppled, we have now the Shia crescent. We have a political Shia in the region. They are threatening the stability of the whole region. Against that, the Sunni, we have Saudi now. Saudi is the guardian. Saudi is the protector of the Sunni Islam. There is Mecca in Saudi. Saudi is the Vatican by the power of 1 trillion. Saudi is Vatican by the power of 1 trillion. Vatican has still power. The stories about the Vatican and the changes within the Vatican, for people who read about it, is very important there too. But let's look at the role of Saudi Arabia too. With this toppling of Saddam Hussein, the conflict between the Shia and Sunni, the eternal divide, has become fundamental. These people came from the IS and settled in an unstable part of the world, which is called Iraq. The border is porous now. There is no army of Saddam Hussein. This is the place where I call in biology. If the immune system is weakened, you have all the germs. The immune system of Iraq was not only weakened, was deleted. And there's no immune system in Iraq, there's no immune system in Libya, there's no immune system in Syria. And all the germs are growing. All societies have hate groups. I think only there is order in Malta that doesn't allow some hate groups to butcher some Muslims around. I can say that today. I'm an academic. Order. Not there is no feeling, there is feeling. And fortunately, here you have people who could express their feelings. There is no order. Add to it, these people need arms. Arms industry. Arms expire. They are like yogurt. They expire. Arms have to be used. Billions every day, millions every day are used. These people don't work, you need to pay them. Then the $1 million question, as Americans say, who is financing them? From where money is coming? Who is giving the logistics? You need a state, you need banks, you need people. You are not the time of Robin Hood, somewhere in the forest of Nottingham. People are, fighting. This is a state, you need government, you need entities. This is all provided by this part of the world. And we have countries behind it. Exporting their ideologies from antiquity. What is beheading? The biggest crime in the Muslim world, I say it on record, let me say it clearly. Why it's a Saudi thing? And it's coming to Iraq. Now why? Saudi, after the toppling of Saddam, became threatened with the eternal enemy, Iran. Iraq, the rest of the Middle East, became a victim of allowing such a great historical rift comes to the fore. And that was the misery of democratization. Brought one of the most sensitive, one of the most damaging rifts in the history of that region to the fore. That is overshadowing everything, every change. The Shia Sunni. In Baghdad today, I went to Iraq, parts of where the government, not Kurdistan, where it's autonomous because of its own history, and I belong to them. I'm a Kurd from Iraq, originally. And I went to the Arab part. You do not believe it.
In the Shia part, you have to show a paper, false, with $100 you can do it. That your name is Shia, you are one of them. Like, for example, a Scottish name and an English name. Something to make it for you understand. Different name. If the Camilleri and the Borges is something related to Sunni, you make an ID that you are a Camilleri or a Borges. And if you move to the Sunni area, you get another paper. Your name is, I don't know, Az-Zopardi, or I don't know, Kassar, or so you are from the Sunni. That much Iraq is divided. The amount of hate on YouTube between the Muslims, the amount of rift is enormous. You should put pity Islam, not see it as a danger. Exaggerated beyond reach, beyond any comprehension of a person that could think. And any danger of Islam is there in its own land. Only a fraction of it is coming to this part of the world. There's a great rift in that part of the world. These people could not sort out to move forward and reinterpret their own religion, as many people from Israel do, scholars from Israel do criticize in that way, and I agree with that. This part of the world was not allowed to reinterpret itself. Much of the change was exogenous. These people came and settled in this unsettled part of Iraq, but funds are coming from somewhere. Ideology is coming from somewhere. I have information, some of them even imitate the Bedouin accent of Saudi Arabia. There's a kind of belonging to that part of the world. In the history of Islam, as Ali al-Wardi says, we had waves of a new Islam coming. Interpretation of Islam, maybe in the most nomadic way. We had waves of nomadic invasion from the Sahara throughout the civilization of the Mesopotamia. And maybe that's another latest form. Much of the ideology now, people don't move. Ideology move, funds move. Has to do with the heartland of Saudi Arabia. The most society that got the richest and did not need to change. We have an archaic Islam. There was no beheading during Saddam. There was no beheading during Gaddafi. People killed each other like everyone kills in this part of the world. I don't enjoy talking about killing, but in Europe it's a taboo. Without killing, they would not have been what they are. Let's also celebrate killing sometimes, in the most not in the positive way. But we should talk about it. There was shooting, there was hanging. The normal killing in Iraq and Libya, like all humans, execute each other. This beheading, in Syria, in Libya there is beheading. In Iraq there is beheading. From where this is coming? Who is supporting these regimes? Who is supporting the regime of Saudi Arabia? Where is the military base? Where is the conversation about democratization about that part of the world? Where are the academics mentioning Saudi Arabia, the right of women? Women cannot drive a car in Saudi Arabia. Women cannot go to the cinema in Saudi Arabia. There we should talk about trying to, if ever there is any scope or any effort to change this part of the world and to induce some change with this happy-go-lucky Europeans who think they saw their own problems last 50 years, the problems of the world are so simple, far from it. To my mind, any talk about democratization is simplistic, non-historical, non-analytical, lacks in-depth understanding of that part of the world. You tell me what should be done. I think modernity itself has to be redefined. If the world wants to live in peace and this project is a project for everyone, it has to be redefined. We are not saying women in Paris and in London to put a veil on, far from it, but also it has to slow down. Europe is moving too fast with this change. They are themselves lost with it and confused. I'm not at all giving any normative. I have no view. This is value-free. This is descriptive. Gay rights, women rights, insect rights, you name it, are controversial in its own land, let alone coming on the head of people that did not witness all these changes. Believe me, it's very alien, this democracy thing. People want stability, want order, want the daily bread. We cannot continue talking like this and reach conclusions, and we try to go to other parts of the world and we try, these are the conclusions, these are the recipes. These are getting nowhere. And unfortunately, it's not a warning. Me, my little mind, I see big problems in the horizon. I see big problems. I'm interested in political science, and I think if there is a war, it will start from the Middle East this time. There's a great turmoil. I am just worried if Saudi Arabia gets the flame, what will happen? We will have an all-out war. It will get very confused, that part of the world, extremely confused. Saudi is the center. Saudi is Mecca. There is the heart of Islam, controversial. So what's happened in that part of the world is clearly, we have instability, we have a divided country, no system, total collapse of the system, and you have thousands of people coming, each with his own agenda, settling in parts of Iraq. But the question is, where they are settled? They are settled in one third of Iraq. They are using the banks, the schools, the streets, the cars, the petrol stations of that part of the world. We are not in Robin Hood time. But why this happened? Why Iraq became three countries? Iraq was stable. The biggest death in the history of Iraq was during the American invasion. 2007, all-out civil war between the Shia and the Sunni. Show me one Middle Eastern country where there was a story of democratization that is stable, except Saudi and Emirates and Qatar. They are very stable. These are not questions. Does any Muslim, if he really wants to fight with purification of Islam, like many of these fighters of the beheading are telling us, if that's their purpose, why they don't turn to Saudi Arabia? I ask here, I'm an academic at any cost, we had bombs and turmoil in all parts of the Muslim world. Why not in Dubai? Why not in Abu Dhabi? Why not in Saudi? Why there are no bombs there? These are big questions for people from the region. This is the view from Iraq. There were problems in Morocco, in Algeria, Tunisia, Libya, Sudan, Egypt, you name it. But Saudi did not have major problems. Qatar did not have major problems. They are all involved. These societies did not change. These societies are an example. They are the antithesis of what Europeans say. The problem here in this region is the stability, the action that these societies witnessed. We have an unstable region where we have thousands of people, and now, of course, they are the same people who were somewhere in Afghanistan. But then the question, who is giving them passports, how they are traveling, these are major questions. So the problem is not about some fighters in the region. The problem has to be studied in a larger, much larger perspective about the Shia, the Sunni, the stability, that order that was eliminated. And then with that, we'll have serious questions about democratization, conflict resolution, you name it. This attitude has to stop. Treating that part of the world as some kind of inferior race that Europeans have been proposing and now teaching them how to live, how to democratize, is really backfiring. If you ask any Muslim man in the street, he tells you what they want from us. They want our oil. I am very, very sorry to report to you, modestly, just to report to you like a little messenger. Don't think that part of the world is happy with how Europeans and Americans are doing things. Far from it. Wrong or right they are. You agree or you disagree with it. There is a lot of irritation. There are a lot of problems in inter-civilizational dialogue. The Muslim world is not happy. Let me add to it, not that I have any my own understanding of it, but far from it. The Arab-Israeli conflict. The way West generally dealt with that has been extremely damaging from their perspective, I speak. Ask any Muslim, 5 years old, what's your problem with the West, with the United States, with this, with that? Because you're Israel. I don't know why. Became the mother of the problems. Intellectually, in Baghdad, our colleagues, that's the problem. While Iraq and Arab world was extremely criticized for being stuck with history. They said, you should democratize. You still involve religion. Your women are separated. You marry 20. This, fine. But then we ask, which countries were changed? Libya, I said that in the last lecture, for those who are new. Libya was changed, forced, Iraq and Syria. By any standard, these were the three most modernizing in that part of the world. Gaddafi had women bodyguards. If that's not music to the ears of the feminists, I don't know what should be that. Symbolic, yes, but Gaddafi had women bodyguards with the gun. So he could say to the world, I believe in women. I'm a Muslim nomad, but women could protect me too. And protecting the leader is a big job in that part of the world. Yet, these were forced to be eliminated. But Saudi and Qatar and the rest, the most archaic, the most damaging, if there is a... It's coming from there, yet they are left in peace. Here is what we call the misery of democracy that brought on us. Misery is inception, misery in its methodology, in its conclusion, recipes, the way it is practiced. I mean, I should stop somewhere, dear colleague. We have even specialization now, democracy assistance. I can't understand that. Democracy assistance, spaghetti assistance. I teach you how to cook spaghetti. History of hundreds of years is put in one word. This is underestimation. That's an insult. The thousands of books Europeans wrote themselves about the history of the world, and they are well documented. Thousands of. This is, to me, an insult to the Faculty of Arts. Thousands of our academics discuss the history of many parts of the world. Loads of books and literature is written how history has been different. Yet we come and we try to play, as the philosopher from Slovenia, Zizek, says, play with history and geography. That's the most dangerous game, unfortunately, academics and policymakers, Pentagon, oil industry, arm industry. But I cannot blame the arm industry. I cannot talk about Pentagon. Who am I? I could talk about academia then. We should not be party to that. Far from it. Far from it. Playing with history and geography is dangerous. You tell me what was the answer. We leave Saddam Hussein there. Why not dialogue? Why not see what this crazy man wants? Why to go to eliminate him? There was always a way. What were these people were demanding? Did anyone discuss? Well, how is the definition of a bad actor in today's world? North Korea is a bad actor. Iran is a bad actor, Iraq was a bad actor, Libya. But if you really dig, they have one commonality. These people were critical. These people criticize the United States, criticize hegemony, criticize the arm industry, the way the economy is, intellectual property rights, you name it, from all our fields. They were eliminated. I ask again, why there's no problem with Saudi Arabia? As any person going to Iraq, any Libyan here, any Middle Eastern man, certainly will single out Saudi Arabia under all, with this all IS that we have. And what allowed Saudi Arabia to become so influential? The instability that this part of the world witnessed. In Libya conflict, Saudi and Qatar were very much involved. There's instability. A whole order was toppled within days without any consideration of the background of the history. Now we have one third of Iraq willing to rewrite history after the Shia rewrote history. Much of the people of Saddam Hussein are here. Everyone worked for Saddam Hussein. It was a system from academics to the cleaners to people selling kebab. You do not remove Saddam, I think you remove the man. You remove the system that was a continuation of centuries of the dominance of the Sunni. The British were very much aware of it. The Ottoman Empire was a Sunni. After they left, the British brought the king from Saudi Arabia. The king of Iraq was a foreigner, a Saudi Arabia Sunni. Sunni remained to control that, to have like a little bridge in that Shia crescent. Now the Shia crescent is complete. There is one land. It could unite one, theoretically, just to make the example. It could become a state now. It could be a Shia state. Now, that's not a problem for Europe. That's a problem for Saudi. Saudi has 10-15% Shia in the most sensitive part of Saudi, the oil. Much of the oil of Saudi is on the other side of Iran. The Shia live there. Any turmoil in Saudi is the end of the region. It's extremely catastrophic. Shia are where the oil is. Add to it economy. At the heart of this economy, add to it. The Sunni have very little oil. Shia and Kurdistan has the oil. Now the Sunni are marginalized. They are poor. Saddam and pro-Saddam are there. Funds are coming. Funds are coming, no problem. Keep the Shia at bay. Sunnis, who is helping Syria? The people fighters of Syria. These are all one group, now became isolated from the control of the government in Syria and the government in Baghdad. This part of the world, we have the IS, what we call the Islamic State. People who share anti-Americanism, anti-Shiatism, and of course, each one that gives you some funds will dictate your agenda and will tell you, you are anti-Shia, you are anti-this, you are anti-Kurd. If some Arab fundamentalist, if some Arab crazy about Nasser, will fund, he says, you should kill the Kurds, people like me, because they are not Arabs. If you are Saudi, Shia is your enemy. You have people who lived in Europe, suffered, I don't know. They could not make it. Life is harder in Europe. And they went and they have some hate in their hearts. I don't know. Some of them are very educated. Some are even rich. There's a cocktail of people that have some anti-thing. But the question is, why should this immune system have reached that level that allows us? I just ask myself, not to glorify Saddam. Without Saddam, I would not have been here. But I just wonder, if this happened during Saddam, what would he have done with this group? I just wonder. I think he would have ordered tanks of sulfuric acid, and I think we should agree with it. If you ask many Iraqis, they say he would have done that, and we should clap for him. I think he would have ordered the oldest tank of sulfuric acid that makes the human melt in seconds, and he would have put all the IS in them. He would have cleansed the country in 1 week, in his peak. And that's what Iraq needs, unfortunately, a big U, needs that power. Gaddafi would not have allowed Libya to fall into pieces, but then there was external intervention that allowed the change to become extremely exogenous, out of the control of the indigenous logic. Who changed Iraq? The outsider. And that's the outcome. A group of fundamentalists that are always looking for some areas instable, where there's no security, where there is exactly, that's the best place where they could fit. At the heart of the Shia-Sunni crescent. I go back to beheading. The biggest crime in the Muslim world, I think in everywhere, is if you kill the head of the state, the big guy, the ruler, the king, I don't know what you name, the clown, whoever rules these countries in this world, the thief, the corrupt, all kinds. Idiots, I know, I think I'm allowed. I think all kinds of people became even leaders of countries. When the king of Saudi in 1975 was killed by his own relative, nephew, shot him because he was a bit modernizing, there are even these reports. How was the killer executed? He was beheaded in public and his head was exhibited on a sword. That happened in Saudi in 1975. Beheading is something from Saudi. The ideology is from Saudi. That is unfortunately protected by the West, protected by the superpowers, protected by the interests of this planet. Maybe to have a more peaceful place, but I'm not sure. I think it's not working like this. Turmoil is coming. This Sunnah Shia is getting nowhere. This fundamentalism of Islam, the rise of political Islam is getting nowhere. And the more we force on democratization, we won't talk about change, it's just working opposite. If you ask us, we should let people more into their own indigenous change. Playing with history and geography is dangerous. I say one last thing and I shut my mouth. I think I said a lot. And I can take questions. I apologize. I don't know where I could stop. The same thing in Russia. In 2009, I was teaching in St. Petersburg, and then there were these professors of social sciences and international relations. They were not people working for McDonald's, with all respect to people working for McDonald's. They were not frying burgers. And those days, there was no crisis in Georgia. There was no crisis of Ukraine. And I remember the Russian colleagues telling me word by word, and exactly happened. He said, if ever West wants to get to our back doors, to our territories, including Ukraine, all that part of the world. We know how to deal with it. We'll make a conflict there for eternity. And they created the conflict in Ukraine. Became another Cold War frontier. Cold War did not die. Cold War is there in Russia. West celebrated the end of the Cold War. No, there's even a hot air. Hot war. Putin pushed back. Also, again, against the pressure to change. Russian society is not American society. In Russia, there is superstition. History is different. Again, we are playing with history and geography. You have to live in Russia to see again how democratization is also funny in that context. Ukraine, again, West wanted to play with history and geography, and that's the outcome again. We have a place that will not be solved soon. Russia's plan was to have an area there under control, to create something that could be always holding on. They call it in strategy, I don't know, to have something, a grip on that part, to be there, part of the solution, not an outsider. These are Russians. They fought with Germany. They were superpower. People underestimate others, unfortunately. I don't know if I made my point about the connection between these two. There is a lot to tell. This is part of a larger exercise, a book on political economy of the Middle East and North Africa, and a large chapter, large of will be our democratization, the change, conflict resolution, you name it. So we have conflict resolution too. We have people from America and Malta meet, and they come with recipes for conflict. And it's not you're underestimating people. I mean, do you think Iraqis don't like to solve their conflicts? Do you think Libyans don't like to solve their conflicts? But it's beyond our reach. It's too complicated. We are weak. We are lost. We are confused. There's Islam. People are fighting. Foreigners are coming. Everyone's funding. It's messy. It's messy. That's the word. Yet you sit in a quiet room behind your computer, a Mac, and then you come with solutions. I mean, I think so. This is what? Let me go to economics. This is a waste of money. I mean, there should be other things. One last thing to make it all, let's go to economics, let's not remain abstract, to see why I'm agitated about this. Between 2003 and 2008, and 2009, 2014, there are studies, all published. Arms sale, only in Europe decreased, in the rest of the world increased. That's democratization. Europeans only demilitarized their own continent. There are less arms in Europe in comparison of 10 years ago. The rest of the world imported more. This, I think, should academics discuss. They should discuss that China increased sales of torture to 90 countries. No one talks about it. Who is selling torture instruments? Do you think China only developed underwear? Do you think only China is producing Nike? China is also producing a lot of arms, selling a lot, competing with the US and Russia. And Germany increased, Germany of Lidl, speaking about a better world, better Europe, increased sales of arms. They are all published for you to see. One last thing. A secret report goes every year, not publicized too much, goes from the General Assembly to the Security Council. It's about financial report, trade report, something like this. And it shows that in 2010, a massive 540 billions were taken out of Africa. There is no comparison whatsoever. It's the elephant to the ants, to the amount of money given to Africa, and we call development assistance. Which development assistance? This is a little installment of what the billions are taken from Africa. These are all published by Europeans. There are statistics calculated by European calculators. Billions every year go out of Africa to the rich world. Billions and billions. And then we give them a few thousands, and we call it humanitarian development assistance. Check. These are figures, not abstract, not some intellectual masturbation. These are figures there on your laptop. Billions every year from Africa go outside. 540 billion in 2010, if I recall. I'm learning, but I'm losing too much at two. 10 things I learn, I forget 20. It's a problem. But the figures are there. Yet, can I say one last thing? Am I allowed? Look how this world is unfair, how this world is twisted. Few Africans come here, working some of them. There are things on YouTube about Muslims, you name it. So the level is at YouTube, isn't much. Some stories of beheading, we know. Blacks coming here, Muslims coming here, Arabs coming here. And you can see the tension inside the heart of Europeans. My old handyman, he told me Muslims will kill us all. I said, yes. I don't know which side you will put me. With Malta, I will be killed, I will kill. I said, no. I said, I have a basement, I hide myself. So I ask, please, think with me. So you have YouTube stories about these people. A bit of them around here, a couple of shops in San Juan. Millions maybe in Europe, still not the majority. But the world is turning, you know, go to and see. We have even a Jewish homepage, to see the role, to add to the misery of the puzzles we have, the role of media. I have a Jewish homepage that all of you Maltese know. There was this guy, clever, maniac, I don't know. I don't like cats, but still, I don't go to that level. He used to crucify cats. All of you know he was Maltese, yes or no? It's on a Jewish homepage. He was a Muslim in Malta. So add to the misery, this media thing. That's another story. We should have people of media to talk about it. When I discuss, I say media in the hands of everyone. Media in the hands of the idiot that Litcha criticized. In the hands of the mediocre. That power of media. There is how many people will believe that a Muslim crucified a cat in Mostar? It's there. Please find it. Type on Google. Mostar cat Muslim. He became a Muslim now. A Muslim hero. And we tell me media in empowering the idiots. Let me not get how much I'm impressed with Nietzsche. I stop here. That's the foundation for the book. The mediocrity. Now I ask, if that much there is friction, hatred I wouldn't use, worries, I don't know what you call it, inside European heart about this change that's around them, ask me how these people will feel from that part of the world if they read books and they study and they learn that Afghanistan was invaded, Iraq was invaded, Libya. So literally you have army, people, blue eyes, white, long nose, they come with the gun, they say, I rule you. How would you expect them to behave? If with YouTube and few immigrants here, the people, Europeans are agitated, do you would not forgive these people if some of them, unfortunately, end up in political Islam out of maybe bankruptcy, having nothing else? No, there are its own problems, of course, we can discuss for centuries. The problem is not part of the world. But I ask, if Iraq was invaded, people, women in Iraq, simple women, don't know where is Baghdad on the capital, on the map. They don't like what Americans did. No one is happy. Ask most Libyans. I'm not happy with the outcome. The outcome was total chaos. The outcome was a devastated system that turned things upside down. Things that the societies built or ruined in centuries. They built and they ruin. A foreign bulldozer came in. That's a problem. Ask Cha'nu, would you accept a foreign bulldozer to ruin the plans? A massive foreign bulldozer came. Europe itself, in all the studies, I have my professor here. Hats off. I have professors. The whole idea in Europe itself was West, Anglo-Saxon, prevent revolution. They fought with the Russian Revolution. They fought with Napoleon. They fought with every revolution. Yet, they wanted evolution. British thing. Our colleagues studied in Britain. Evolution. Things come with teaching. But you made the biggest revolution in the history of Iraq. A system collapsed in a couple of days. No police, no army, no embassy, no funds, no bank. Everything was looted. Central bank became like fish market. Iraq collapsed. Salary of a worker in Iraq after the invasion was 30 eggs, one tray of eggs. People starved. I tell you one thing, you don't believe it. The misery of what happened there. I asked some girls, I knew them without the veil in Iraq. And I said, what damn happened to you? You were without the veil, I remember you kids. What is happening this? Engineers, doctors, what is this veil thing? Why this political Islam thing? Why? Let's look at aesthetics. Huxley, the eccentric English writer, LSD man. Huxley said, look at the society, interact, and you could see signals. One of the major things, you know. They said there was so much shortage of clothes or underwear for women during the war, the peak of the invasion, that the easiest thing was just to put a sack on yourself. And then slowly, slowly, people even got used to it. There was nothing to wear. Even that, reached that level. That even how people are dressed up was sometimes out of necessity, out of the economic disaster. There were no material, there were no clothes. People just dressed up a sack just to go out, women. You could not make a skirt. Every woman knows it takes much more to make skirt and trousers and whatever. And make your hair where there is no shampoo and nothing to wash than just to put a sack on your head and go about your life. The same in Afghanistan. There was a Saudi religion that forcing people. There is always something called Wahhabism. Please do research about Wahhabism. Wahhabism is strong in Islam now. Wahhabism is a Saudi product. Wahhabism is archaic. Wahhabism is the people of Najd. There are even conflicts inside Saudi with it, but maintained with that superpotence, superpower of money, of oil. The conflict is in Saudi, which version of Islam? This is an archaic form of Islam that has beheading, that has so many enemies. These IS, their enemy are the Kurds, the Shia, Americans, Jews, European, Christian, you name it. They reject everything. They are rejectionist people. They are fighting with modernity. They are fighting with change, big change, change itself. They are crazy about continuity. We have them in this world. How many people in Malta are stuck with continuity for eternity? Continuity in the head of people. Why people don't change? It's normal. It's something normal. It's something that we could observe in all fields of society. People do not change quickly. And more in this part of the world that was isolated, this is desert. And virtually we are getting all these ideologies. This was never the Islam of Iraq. This was never the Islam of Libya. You can ask any Libyan. He tells you, we were Muslims during Gaddafi. There were mosques. No one beheaded one. Yes or no, sir? You were in Libya. Our ambassador is here. How was Libya during Gaddafi? Not stable. Stable or not, sir? The most important. Very stable. You could make business. You could study. You could get everything. But these people knew the game. They were from inside. Saddam was Iraqi. Saddam was Sunni. Saddam had the army, Sunni, security, Sunni. Sold oil, maintained order at a cost. Which change was not at a cost? Japanese development. With two atomic bombs, they had to come to the way Americans wanted. We don't have yet atomic bombs, maybe on Iran. There's so much to talk. Nuclear power, Iran, Israel, there's so much. I should stop somewhere. And I apologize for any shortcoming, deficiency, defect. I am far from anything special. I just reported you from Iraq. There's a lot of friction and happiness. Simple terms, they just tell you they want our oil. They are interested. Look at Saudi. I mean, they can. The man in the coffee shop will tell you stories and stories. And for anyone who studies society or youth or community knows when the grassroots, there are ideas, it's hard to change. The grassroots is problematic at the root of things. And unfortunately, in this instability, lack of a strong power, lack of centralized power, these societies for centuries had to endure, had to put up, because that was the only solution that came from inside. People, there should be some respect. Systems produce their leaders. I told the journalists of the time, Saddam Hussein did not come from the moon. Gaddafi did not come from Mars. He reflected the need of the society. That has to be clearly understood by anyone dares to go in class and talk. He should go and spend some years in Iraq, in Libya, in Tunisia, in Nigeria, not sit behind the Mac and come up with recipes. That's not analytical. That's an insult to history, an insult to academic research. If we want a better world, not in this way. Not in this way. I warn here, I might not last too long at this university, neither be here. I know where I do belong. But I'll be the first to go all the way, criticize the West for what it did. It should not now negate its historical responsibility. London globalized the world. Paris globalized the world, and they don't want to be globalized today, not to have French in Paris, not to have English in London. Isn't it stupid and silly? So you go to the world, you globalize it, England and Paris. London and globalize the world, and then they are angry why London and Paris are globalized. Doesn't make sense. You change the world in your way, and you don't want your part of the world to change. So I think we should start in academia. We should stop this selling of modernity as the eternal. We should look at the criticism of modernity itself, see how we shape it, see how at which dose. I mean, an example of the film. I was criticized by some pseudo, I don't know who writes, digging into history of people like, whatever. Let's stop, not making it personal. That's why I said the film should not be published, cartoon of Muhammad. Do you think I'm worried about the cartoon? Do I look an idiot like me? Do you think our intellectuals are idiots? Do you think people in Iraq are all in love with Muhammad and with Islam or Libyans? Or this is the only view they have about the world? Far from it. Far from it. Far from it. There are cooler than you in Iraq. There are cooler in Libya than you, if the word is cool. We laugh on the cartoon. We make fun of it. We enjoy watching it. Yeah, Muhammad, historical. Who saw Muhammad? But you think that will be accepted in the mountains of Afghanistan? Are we in New York? Are we in Paris? If modernity does not understand who is the client, we are in trouble. You want to show a film in Afghanistan in the mountains. You think you are showing it to Paris, in Paris, or in Liverpool? You want people in the middle of Saudi accept, in the middle of Pakistan accept that film? That becomes a form of a humor. Could you make these films in the 30s against Hitler? He has pictures, I mean, police hitting the intellectuals, academics in Berlin, when they demonstrated. Why we are myopic? Why we forget so quickly? Why history is shunned? Why we don't look at the history of this part of the world? Who spoke of democracy in the 19th century of Europe? What was building and ruining and killing each other? And I mean, I don't know. The problem is that we are, I don't know, ignoring history and geography. So I apologize for any mistake, I don't know anything special. I just shared with a few ideas. There's much more. These are just a few ideas from a larger volume. And I apologize, and I'm sure you don't agree with much of what I say, but this is all academia, and they're all ideas, and I said there's no absolute truth. I'm really skeptical about any form of objective truth in social sciences. This is not physics, this is not chemistry, this is not biology. Which I miss, that clarity and questionable truth about natural sciences, why humans are complex. Material is easier to study. Any question, please? I don't know, Ms. Kassar, what shall we do? Please. I first thank my colleague, Ms. Kassar Valentina, for all the logistics, and really, I'm grateful. Please, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Sorry, I take some water.
Very, very enjoyable lecture indeed. I appreciate what you have just said. I noticed throughout your lecture, though, that you steered away from one particular country in the Middle East.
Yes.
And namely the Sultanate of Oman.
The?
Sultanate of Oman.
Yes.
I'm quite aware their type of Islam is slightly different to the others.
Yes.
It's called Ibadism.
Of course.
And it's ruled by decree. Can you tell us something about it yourself? What is your view about the country?
I am not, I apologize. I am no expert about studies of Islam. I know political Islam. I put within the context of political economy, the revival of Islam. I see the history of the conflict, the rift, yes. But I'm aware that at least in terms of political economy, Oman also has its own particular way of doing things. Oman, the government up to the 60s, extremely strongly, rejecting any form of modernity. Even embassies are not encouraged to open in Oman and Muscat. I mean, you rather work from Dubai and Abu Dhabi or from Jeddah. They are keeping extremely slow. The same with Sharjah. Even developed model in the Arab world has been very political. Oman does not want Dubai, does not want big 20, 50,000, I don't know, roofs and I don't know, an island in the sea and all these mega projects, capitalist invention. No, no, they are not into that. Oman is a traditional society. Very difficult for foreigners to penetrate too. Very tribal, very, I mean, different than Baghdad or Damascus. Oman is the world that did not change much. It has oil too. I mean, inside Omani society, you never penetrate. Their own weddings, their own funerals. I mean, it remained. It's traditionally, yes. Oman, and the oil allows the stability. There's oil in Oman. And they are small, few population. And greener than the rest of the Arab world. It has mountains too.
Yes, indeed. They haven't got much oil, but what they have is...
They are not poor.
Controlled. Properly controlled. The income is properly controlled.
Yes. No, no, it's not a bad
place.
They are
very tolerant of the Christian religion.
Yes.
And perhaps these youngsters need to know, because I spent 12 years in Oman.
I'm sure.
They need to know that even in Oman, in a place called Rui, just outside the capital area, there is a Christian church.
Yes.
And named after St. Peter and St. Paul. Okay? But they are very tolerant of other religions.
Okay.
Okay? They are not an aggressive people.
No.
The Ibadism is different to the rest of the Islamic countries.
Yes.
And believe me, it's one of the most wonderful experiences anybody can experience if you go to Oman. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me say something about tolerance, I beg you. I think it's important to notice here. I mean, this tolerance thing, I mean, for centuries, all these religions lived in Iraq. Conflict existed in India between people, in Europe. I mean, it's existed. But we have Christian, There are Kurds like me, share my language, but he's a Christian. Mary, Paulus, Michaelos, in Kurdistan. I ask one thing. This beheading thing which we are talking about, show me one here. Let's find one source. If a Muslim beheaded a Jew, and in theory and practice, it has been the eternal enemy. There were wars. There were prisoners of war during the wars between Israel and the Arabs. 56, 73, 1967, the 7 days war, 6 days war. I mean, but they were not beheaded. That's the whole thing. People were more tolerant. I fully agree with you. Tolerance is being reversed. In the West, there's identity. Identity politics, that sort of people who studied from identities. I say more with modernity. I look at it from how modernity cannot hammer everyone in the same way. It's a knife that has to be seen how it's hammering. But other people see from identity. There's identity in the Balkans, in Western Europe. I mean, you can see. I mean, many people love Norman Lowell. They don't dare to talk about it. Why we don't call a spade a spade? I mean, there's identity thing. Tolerance, even in the Muslim world, increased intolerance by 10 times, tenfold. But it's a more human phenomenon now. So that has to do with maybe more general trends. That could be economy, maybe. Could be, I don't know. But there is intolerance in China toward the Muslims. There is intolerance in India. But then there is order in some society. You maintain order. Others lack that order, and the mess comes out. That's what Iraq is IS about. I mean, there are hated groups. There are people who are ready to kill Muslims tomorrow. I was passing, going to my pharmacy in Birkirkara. I mean, it's a reality. A guy who's joking, sitting there, who doesn't do anything from the morning till the evening. One of those that milk the society. And they're increasing so much in the name of democracy, too. And major criticism of democracy was, way back in the 19th century, its economic inefficiency. And we see it in Malta. So many people in Birkirkara do nothing. And whenever I pass, he said, 1,000 euros today you made profit. And I say, no, 2,000 euros today. Not one. So I was passing there, and what he told me? It was just the day after of the story of the beheading. By the way, it's YouTube, I don't know. Well, and then this thing, he asked me, this guy said, we should cut your neck. You are cutting necks in Iraq or in Syria. I mean, he literally did this. I mean, I asked myself, not that I'm scared of, you know, my neck be cut, far from it, but the problem is, it's there. The feeling is there, I mean. There's law and order. He knows he will spend 30 years in prison. If there is not that barrier, I don't know how things develop. To put things in context, that's all the scope. Remove order, make chaos, and that man, depressed, his wife kicks him out, cheats on him, has no money to smoke cigarettes maybe, might come and try to cut my neck, I don't know, for a reason. I'm Muslim, Iraqi, or whatever I am for him. So I don't think it's very out of this planet, this beheading thing. And beheading is antiquity. In Mexico, drug dealers behead each other, dismantle each other, turn them into corned beef and lunch and meat. I mean, you can see now, 2014, in Mexico, in Brazil, drug dealers, they do behead each other too. So let's not make it something very, you know, out of this planet, please.
Very interesting. Very interesting. But what do you see as the solution for this problem?
Modernity has to be defined. You can't tell every society women have rights. As simple as that. You should take care. Can I say it in simple terms, but not in that way? I have only one example to show you, but it's not in that way. And I said, religion was invented there. If ever people made people think, I think start in the Middle East. Because I fully believe that democratization, the system in Europe, is heir to Christianity, for sure. Like Hitler said, this God is alien, is an Oriental God. My point is this. The solution is, we define how we define what is about development. What are we? Where are we going? The minute that Europeans think that gay rights should have rights, it should be extremely localized, largely internal. Not NGO go and get around, get paid by some or go scatter all around in Yemen, in Iraq, Russia, Ukraine, China. Gay rights, this, you are this, films for. No, no, no. This is challenging. This is war. And by the way, one last thing I forgot to tell. Now there is war here, no? There is war. They are killing. But sorry, 2001. George W. declared war. War against terrorism, so it's war. Yes or no? They are killing, no? But there's war again, and these are enemies, America, United States. So there's war, but who declared war on them in Afghanistan? Who declared war on these people who find United States, no, in 2001. Did they declare war? They declared war, officially, United States, a country. Now, who is the terrorist? What's the definition of terrorism? I fail to see. All things are terrorists. Multinational corporations in Africa are terrorists. They milk them. They don't pay taxes. Ask the people of the Malta Enterprise, the stories they know about European companies in Africa. They are not terrorists. We have the Ethiopian colleague. What do you think of multinational corporations in Africa?
There is a lot of kind of what we call incentives to attract foreign investment. But when you assess things, it's not that simple. It's not that investment.
Okay.
It's profit. They want to exploit.
Now, the message to this class is basically, whatever people think, unfortunately, I say it, I'm not saying that I'm celebrating it. Unfortunately, no one outside the West, whatever the West is, put it United States, EU, missionaries that go give recipes, no one outside is appreciating that. No one believes that they are genuine. I am sorry, I want to convey that till I die. If anyone is interested in a better, should get this message here, I'm standing. Arabs are not happy with the West. Africans are not happy. Chinese are not. Russians are not. Latin Americans are the children of Europe. If you were in Buenos Aires, I went, it's like Milan and Torino. That's something like the New World. That's product. But speak of the major old civilization of this part of the world. Chinese are not happy. I'm not sure if Japanese, Koreans, Russians, Ukrainians, Indians. Indian because they are peaceful, Hinduism. They've been hammering about a polarity, multipolarity. They try. South Africa, I mean, the point is this, I want to say, we should look different how we sell modernity. The signals that how change happened in Europe. You cannot have five people hardly have studied their own history, they don't know who was Manuel Dimek, and go make an association called the Humanist Association, and they try to attack this Muslim and that Muslim society. That's for me absurd. That's freedom to the mediocrity. That's what Nietzsche should come out of the graveyard and see it with his own eyes. Where you let five people who did not study who was Manuel Dimek, don't know who was Borges Olivier, what he did in Valletta with the girls, with the women, don't know their own history, yet go and give recipes and why that film was not allowed. And they're all over the media, and people read for it and think these people in the Muslim were some kind of alien, twisted, deformed mentality. No, you have to look at their history. You have to look at which things they passed through, how ideas are developing. If you are developing ideas, you will be a cactus of your own. What ideas are born, and there are people here in philosophy. Ideas are not born in vacuum. The environment, the conditions, the history. How can you compare history of Europe, the winners, the colonizers, with people that lost every war? People that were colonized. A historian here, academics are here, the winner and the loser wrote the same history. We know it. We are the losers. How we write the same history? The winner is saying this is your history. No. Come and listen to the loser. What's his history? I'm sad that Islam is dominant in Iraq. I am sad that women are with the veil. I like to see pretty women too. Very nice. This is life. I did not create that. It's nice to look at, you know, but then it's there. It's there. Please.
First of all, I want to congratulate you on your lecture.
Thank you, sir. You're my lecturer.
Among
Professor Pirotta, our founder of the... No, sir. Our lecturer. He gave me lectures at the academy too.
Thank you for the effort. What I was going to say was that what I liked primarily about your lecture, not the only thing, was that it was thought-provoking, and I think all lectures at the university should be thought-provoking. I'd like to make two points.
Yes, sir.
You talked about democratization, and I would agree with the general trend of what you are saying, that I don't think democratization can be imposed.
Exactly.
It took millennia for democratization in the West to be what it is today.
Which is stability.
Now, if the West tries to export democratization, it is doing exactly the same mistake with colonization.
Yes, sir.
Because one of the elements which are not taken into consideration by, or were not taken into consideration by the colonialists and by the democratizers today, is that all of these peoples have their own sense of pride, their own sense of their own culture,
self-esteem,
where they come from, and immediately you start talking to them about your superior values, you are telling them you are beneath us.
Can I clap for you, sir? That's exactly what the sentiment.
So that is one of the reasons why that cannot
go
happen.
Forward.
It will have to take a long process of time, and these countries will have to work out their own problems in their own way before they come back.
Yes.
That's my first point. My second point is, you skirted for a long time before you came round to Saudi Arabia, and you started showing us with your hand where the money was coming from and so on and so forth. And towards the end of your lecture, you mentioned Wahhabism, which, in my opinion, is probably the most extreme form of Islam. Now, we have there a country, a very economically powerful country, which is ruled by a family that was put there to rule that country for reasons which were congenial to the West. At
the
time. The
whole stability of the world.
That's right. And this is also a country which is exporting its Wahhabism, very often under different forms, and at the same time, it is ensuring that the democratization process does not enter within its territory. We seem to forget, for example, the nationality of some of the most well-known terrorists from the Islamic world. Most of them came from Saudi Arabia.
Even Al-Qaeda.
The money that is funding much of what is going there, without any doubt, is Saudi Arabian money.
And others in the Gulf too.
Because one of the things that they're doing is they're using their money to ensure that that kind of turmoil does not approach within their own territory.
Very correct. That's their foreign policy.
That's my second point.
Keep the fire at bay. Yes. Keep these 12,000 people outside the territory in poor Iraq.
Thank you very much, Dr. Athanali. I think your thesis that modernity is profoundly destabilizing is
very much
serious food for thought. What occurs to me when I listen to you are two things. First, what makes this your thesis very frightening is that you can almost not see how it can be stopped. That is to say, we ourselves, as individualists in an individualistic culture, are so used to a culture and a political culture, above all, of rapid change.
Yes.
The whole, if you will, to be very self-critical, the whole system of electoral democracy, the whole system of platforms, campaigns, proposals, laws, it's almost parallel to the the political parallel to economic capitalism. Economic capitalism
very much.
Cannot be stopped because of the what Marx outlined, the whole system of expanded reproduction.
Very good.
Capitalism itself, it's bound to change.
Very good.
You are outlining, it seems to me, a very frightening possibility that Western democracy, Western, is itself so committed to change that we almost find it impossible intellectually, as we sit here listening to you, to conceive of the world in which we didn't always intervene, in which there wasn't an international debate, in which, under certain circumstances, there shouldn't be an intervention. In other words, you are really saying, hold on, hold off, slow down. I fear that the Western system has no internal capacity to slow down politically. That's my first
Very
point.
Correct.
My second point is the one thing you have not talked about today, which exacerbates, in my own view, the whole situation enormously, and generates a very real possibility of World War III, is Israel. You haven't talked about Israel.
I mentioned
and the extent to which Israel, in fact, has very often been the justification for very vicious men coming to power in the Middle East.
Very correct. Very correct. But this is a bit sensitive. We have still many supporters, and we had an ambassador. He was the head of the Jewish Maltese Association thing. He was posted to Saudi. Well, let's stop somewhere. But I don't know, there is a lot to tell, but the more I think about it, the more I go back to Iraq, and the more I'm going to Tunisia too, so unfortunately I'll meet more people, they think like me, and that was the purpose of a public lecture, at least to convey, yes, modernity is the biggest problem, the dose, how it is given, is destabilizing, and maybe just something, maybe food for thought, more profs, maybe nihilism itself, the concept of nihilism, of democracy itself, and Christianity is there too. 19th century, nihilism, it destroys itself. I don't know.
What about Israel?
Well, Israel is a major problem that has been historically, Judaism and Islam had always an easy relationship with extremely varied interpretations in a world that did not write only historically, but then they fell behind much. Much of documentation is very late in the part of the world. Mostly it has been oral, a lot of stories are oral, and that has to be also analyzed, Noam Chomsky, of the influence of language, how this Islamism also. Very little is based on text, something written. Islam did not say this Islam. Much of it is oral interpretation, it's extremely open there. Interpretation has a much larger role than text here. Writing had come later, much later, there's less material. Professor Pirotta, printing came later in that part of the world. Much of it is oral, stories, each putting much more his input, personal agenda. It's problematic, sir. I mean, something came with a different thing. I mean, it's completely the system itself, I mean, it got shocked. This is the system of Islam and modern political economy of the Arab world got severe shocks. It punched heavily. I mean, the society is confused. How much? In Tunisia, a major issue for a girl is, there's a lot to tell you, profs. There's a lot. In Tunisia, the major issue for a girl is many girls. I lived there 3 years. I was naughty. Many Tunisian girls, the problem is to remain virgin before marriage, be a good Muslim, or enjoy life and have fun. A major debate in the mind, psychological, between modernity and what Islam is all about. It's shocking. It goes to the individual level. Even food for thought for psychology and psychotherapy, and when you name it. There's a lot to tell. Even from Huxley's view, of looking at the aesthetics and interaction of humans in the street, or quoting, for example, Najib Mahfoud, where he went to the town and he tried to live with them and he wrote his novels, rather than going to some mega theories of some professor from Finland and Oslo and Timbuktu, go to society and mix with them and reach conclusions. Some mega theories, product of Mac and, I don't know, some programs. But one last thing, solutions are fast in Europe. In Europe, people can eat in 5 minutes. It's part of it, sir. Let's make it a bit more public. You can eat in 5 minutes. You can clean your house in 5 minutes. Vacuum, everything could be faster. Recipes are also fast nowadays. That's why I say McDonaldization of recipe. That's dangerous. Modernity is much, much more complex than every pseudo-academic trying to tell us he's an academic. Much larger modernity is. Takes a lot of years to understand what we play with that modernity thing. How we export ideas. It takes much more than some pseudo-academics around who read a couple of books about I don't know what, and that's dangerous in academia. We cannot continue these recipes, at least that we are people who talk, who give ideas. We can't, maybe one day we can affect Pentagon and I don't know, Kremlin and Beijing and Riyadh and I don't know. Any question, please?
He mentioned that.
Before I interrupt him, I'm sorry, I should thank you all. I should thank you all before I forget. I'm really honored and I'm very happy you gave me this opportunity. It was something I wanted to do. Well, I'm putting it into books and writing, I hope. It takes time and it's very hard. Hopefully next year this book will be in my sabbatical if I survive. It will finish by the American University. But I'm very sorry if I, yeah, I thank you. That's very important. Thank you for coming. I don't want to keep you long. We answer and then we leave you in peace.
Thank you for wonderful lecture. He mentioned about Israel, which is, in my view, the conflict between Israel and Palestine underestimated.
Very much.
I came from Africa. At least I know about Islam around me,
yes.
And I understand, I feel the impact of this conflict. We are very far away from Middle East.
Yes.
The impact of this conflict is immense. It is in everyone's mind, particularly Muslims. And we underestimate it.
Yes.
The second thing is, somebody mentioned about tolerance. The tolerance, the issue of tolerance in Muslim countries, it exists before.
If you give a lecture like me, it will take you 2 days.
Okay. Before Arab-Israeli conflict. I mean, there are minor conflicts, but when you see what have been written by historians who wrote about religion, I mean, other minorities, other religious groups living in Muslim countries were more tolerated than those minority living under Christian countries. I mean, this is how
that's
they
wrote
it. I mean,
the
issue of tolerance, I mean, the impact of this conflict of the Middle East, and again, the power of money after 1970s, the expansion of Wahhabism, which, as it is today, which came into Saudi Arabia in 1930s, which then, by the power of money, spread all over the world. So, I mean, we should not underestimate this conflict. I mean, it's
I won't bother you more. We said something, but I think you had enough. Thank you very much. I don't want to. Thank you.
You have just listened to a talk organized by the Department of International Relations entitled The Rise of the Islamic State in Iraq and the Misery of Democratization. This talk was delivered by Dr. Arsalan Al-Shinawi.